Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All babies, regardless of the circumstance of how they were conceived, are a gift from God. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. This is episode 210, and I've got my little brother, Parker, joining us, one of my favorite guests to be on here answering questions. What's up, Park?
What's up, man?
We answer your questions. You email GrangerSmithPodcast@gmail.com, and we'll walk through anything you got going on. We don't have any notes, or we're not prepared. We haven't read these questions beforehand. And a lot of exciting news coming in the future of this podcast, but right now, this is still all that it is. Email GrangerSmithPodcast@gmail.com. Parker is actually a fellow seminarian with me at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And this next semester, which we're starting next week, we are in the same class together.
Yep. It's a fire hose to the face. It's pretty ridiculous.
But a fire hose to the face.
I'm enjoying it.
A fire hose to the face, kind of like this podcast. Just kidding. First question at random. I'm going to pull these up. Subject line says, saying I love you. And the email says this: Granger, my name is Noel. I'm from Warsaw, Indiana, and I love your podcast and music. Side note, that's where we got the wood from this house, is the old barn woods from Warsaw, Indiana.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she says, my question is, who should say I love you first? That's a good one to start the podcast with.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of unknowns there.
Know anything. How about... old are you? How long have you been dating?
Well, I'd say not knowing any of those things, if you're just asking me if the guy or the girl should say, I love you first, typically it's up to the guy to take the initiative to ask the girl out in the first place, to use the D word, date, and to not just say, do you want to go hang out? Do you want to come over and watch a movie? You know, to use that word date lets the girl know what we're doing, what my expectations should be, what your intentions are. Anyway, so all that to say, I would say that primarily the guy's responsibility is to say, I love you first. And if he's not, and if this girl is like, where is this going? He still hasn't said I love you, and it's been so long. Then that could be a red flag.
Matt, I agree. I think that, like Parker said, without knowing your situation, Noel, I think those are pretty good guidelines. Without knowing your age, how long you've been dating, what kind of guy this is, how you feel about him, I'd say the guidelines are make sure that he's being, and this is also a message to everyone else that's dating, define what you're doing. Because it's crazy how people could be misled and think, I don't know what this is. I don't know if this is, he's just a friend, or if he just likes hanging out with me. Maybe he likes my brother. He thinks my dad's cool. I can't figure this out. So guys, define what you're doing. Like Parker said, just say date or go steady or go. Will you go with me is what we used to say like in junior high. Will you go with me? And everyone just knew what that meant. But define it. And then after you define it, then Noelle won't have to worry about where this is going. And she'll just know if you guys really like each other that maybe one day he'll say, I love you.
One thing that my now wife and I did as well that's going to be pretty old school to some people is we decided when we started dating that we weren't going to use the word love until if and when we were engaged. That was just kind of a, I didn't say when we get engaged, I'll say it because I didn't know if I was going to marry her or not yet. But we both just came to the consensus that let's not say I love you until if and when that point happens. Of if you just think about what love is and how we just use it so flippantly today, I think that there should be a sort of retraction of that word and a reverence and meaning behind it before you just start giving your heart away and start using that word flippantly.
Totally agree. Tell them what else you did when you and Amy were dating or engaged, I guess, all through it.
Just not kissing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We just decided not to kiss. And which sounds crazy, to even say it out loud. And I just hear everybody rolling their eyes who are listening. But yeah, when I became a Christian and you know, the question that you hear all the time is how far can I go with my girlfriend and it not be sin? And the posture of that question when I thought about it long enough was how close can I get to the edge of this cliff, but then not fall off? Or another way of putting it, how far away can I get away from God, but still stay under his good graces? And so it's just kind of torture to be physically intimate with your significant other, even if you're not going to have sex, because it's just going to make it that much more difficult to stop. And so we just, honestly, it was so freeing to just say, we're not going to kiss at all. And it made everything else so much easier because when you cut off that, the emotional roller coaster that comes from being physically intimate with someone, you're able to think so much more soberly when you are deciding if they're going to be your future husband or wife.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And it also helps expedite the engagement process.
Yeah, true.
Right? It's like you don't want to set your engagement for a year and a half, 2 years from now. You're like, man, let's get this thing rolling. I really want to kiss this girl. But let me say this. There's a lot of people that I know what they're thinking. A lot of people are thinking, man, you don't really know somebody. You can't truly have that connection until you're intimate with somebody. What do you say to that argument?
Yeah, that's just not true. If anything, you're able to be more intimate because you're not blinded by all of the chemicals that come in your mind when you have sex with somebody. Like our brains are wired to bond to the thing, to the other human that we're having sex with. And when you do that with someone that you're not married to, it just starts to get in all of these other factors and you start to get blinded by other things because you just become love drunk with this person and addicted to this physical feeling rather than who they are as a person. You get to know them, I think, so much better. And then the other thing with that is, you know, you hear people say you got to test drive the car. It's like we're literally comparing other human beings to vehicles that are supposed to be used. So yeah, I just don't think it's true that you need to be able to be physically intimate with someone to get to know them better. And then the other thing is, it's like you said, you know, there's people out there that, you know, this is a very sensitive topic. And so I don't want to come across overly judgmental, but I just genuinely empathizing with someone who's been living with their significant other for a long time. It's like you said, why would they want to get married? You know, they're already having sex. They're already living together. They may already have children together. What's the point of getting married at that point? You know, there's no, there's no boundaries for the marriage covenant at that point in my mind.
That's great, man. I don't have anything to add to that. What I heard you say essentially was a mature relationship should drive intimacy, not the other way around. Because you're saying, because people will argue, no, you can't know somebody. You can't have a good relationship till you're intimate. And you're saying, no, it's the other way around. You establish a mature relationship, and that will determine a lot of other things, including intimacy is one of them. And the world says the opposite. The world says intimacy then creates a mature relationship. Well, guess what? The world has a track record to that that's not very good. So,
yeah, man. Yeah. The world says to focus everything on the sexual relationship to the physical attributes, and then the other stuff comes later. And it's just like, man, when you're married, that red hot love is going to wear off very quickly. Mm. And if that's what the foundation is, then, you know, what are you left with? That's not just the physical intimacy.
Love it. Let me move on. Then we're going to go to like, because I could tell by these subject lines, we're all over the map here on this episode, and that's good. This next question, subject line says, leaving organized religion. Hey, Granger, I was born and raised in the Mormon Church, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Within the last year, my husband and I decided to leave, and I'm so grateful we did not become like most of our other members who leave and walk away from Jesus altogether. We are now attending SMCC, South Mountain Community Church in St. George, Utah. We absolutely love it, and we're so grateful we found it. Deconstructing everything that you've ever known is very hard. And with that being said, my mom is still a devout member of the church. My dad has never been a member, but has recently started going to church with her in the last 2 years. When I told her that we would be leaving the church, she was heartbroken. I'm the third of her children to leave. My older brother and my younger sister have also left, leaving just my two younger siblings who live at home in the church with her. I don't know if you know anything about the Mormon church, but having left, I now believe it's a horrible organization and they are worshiping a Christ who cannot save them. Any advice on how we should just be an example to them or how to share a little teaching of God that can help them realize that they are in need to take the blinders off? It is heartbreaking to watch finally being on the outside. Thank you, Anonymous. All right. Hey, thanks for the email, Anonymous. And let's dive into this. It's a lot, and a lot that I cannot empathize with. I do know a lot about the LDS Church. Parker knows I've studied a lot about this. Not as much, I don't know as much as you do, but I have spent a significant amount of time in Utah and have a good deal of friends from that church that we talk on the regular with. I want to give a warning first with your email, because I want to kind of caution you on everything that you said and make sure that we're just kind of slightly tapping the brakes here. And the first thing that I immediately thought of with some caution, first of all, grateful for your email, you know, but you said, I'm so grateful we did not become like the other members who leave and walk away from Jesus altogether. Like right there, I heard the tax collector and the Pharisee parable come up in my head where it's like, thank goodness I'm not like that guy, like that tax collector. You know, we tithe, we're good people. We've made the right decisions. We chose the right path. We studied enough. We know enough of the Bible now. We've come to see the light. We've unfolded our own blinders, basically. Thank goodness we're not like that tax collector. That's literally what the parable is. And then in the parable, the tax collector is beating his chest, looking down and downcast. And he says, have mercy on me, a sinner. And then Jesus says, I tell you, who was justified was him, not the Pharisee. So that's I'm not comparing you to that. I'm just saying, let's caution ourselves with ever looking at anyone else and going, ha, so glad I'm not that guy. I've been doing really good, okay? Second of all, I want to acknowledge how difficult it must be, like you said, to go against your parents, what you're calling organized religion. Very difficult. And then we'll get to the heart of the email. And that's when you're asking, Any advice, this is what your question is, any advice on how we could just be an example to them or share to them a little teaching of God that could help them realize they need to take the blinders off? That's what you said. That's your question. And so a couple thoughts I'll let Parker dig into. First thought is you cannot take the blinders off. You didn't, and no one else can. It's not within your power. That's within the power of a sovereign God. We have a responsibility, as Parker and I just actually looked at today or yesterday when Amy sent that. We have the responsibility to believe, but we cannot take blinders off. Jesus says in John 3 that a man must be born again to enter the kingdom of heaven. And you and me and everyone else didn't contribute to our first birth. So why would we contribute to our second birth? We don't have a power in that. So you can't take the blinders off. Why am I saying all this to you? Well, I'm saying it because I want to feel from you, Anonymous. I just want to feel a love for the members of that church. Because if you come in with this Pharisee idea of, come on, man, what can I teach you to learn that you're wrong? You're a horrible, this is your words, it's a horrible organization. You're worshiping a Christ who cannot save. That right there, that attitude, I promise you, doesn't do anything for anybody besides just turn them off and say, well, I'm done talking to Anonymous. And you're zealous. I understand that. And that's kind of part of this deal too. But you're asking me any advice on how we could be an example to them. Love them. Love them. And through that love, you could share your witness and share the gospel with them. And that's it. You share the gospel embedded in the love that you have. I mentioned that I have a lot of friends from that church. Well, I have two. I'm always friends with the current missionaries in my area, which is Georgetown, Texas. And so the two elders that are missionaries in Georgetown, Texas, I'm friends with them right now. And they're actually coming to the house tomorrow. They're coming over tomorrow. One of them wants a signed copy of Like a River. That's part of the reason. But this will be the second time that they come over. And man, I love those guys. I love hosting them, serving them, and telling them the gospel and evangelizing to them. And one thing I don't do within that conversation is say, you know, you're part of a horrible organization. I don't say that. Parker, what do you got for this?
I don't have much to add. I think that what you're saying is to approach her salvation, first of all, with just really just humble gratitude of just like, God, I'm no better than them. Mm. I was so blind and you saved me when I didn't deserve it. And then when you have that posture coupled with, you know, your parents' salvation is not ultimately your responsibility. If they don't get saved, if your friends in the LDS church don't get saved, you evangelize to, you're not a failure. Your job as a born-again believer in Christ is to just lovingly share that truth of who Jesus is, what he calls us to do, and pray. You can pray for your parents. You can pray for your friends there. And you can rest knowing that, like you said, salvation is the Lord's. And throughout that, have a posture of Paul's words of, you know, such were some of you. And so you don't ever just beat them over the head with it only. Approach it with a posture of humility, thinking, man, I was blind too. And who are people who tried to share the truth with me? And I turned them away. And then also just living that example out and loving them well.
That's great. This podcast has actually opened a lot of doors of conversation between me and the LDS church. And a lot of the friendships that I have, like text basis relationships, started really from this podcast, from the past years. And so if anyone's listening now from the church and wants to email me, grangersmithpodcast@gmail.com, to have any kind of discussion, the dialogue is open. Love you and love your church as well. Also love the state of Utah. What a beautiful place. And I've loved so many years traveling there with music. Park, I think we have time. If we could get one more in just a few minutes, we'll take a break. You know what? I don't know if we can. These seem... Let me take a break, because I want to give everybody the full time. So we'll take a break and be right back. I haven't really told anybody this yet, but we are building a brand new Grangersmith.com, all new, and we decided to build it onto Shopify. So we had the idea that just in case, you know, we need to be able to sell like a river books on my website, we would use Shopify. And Shopify is something we've used for a long, long time. And we found it when we just didn't know where else to turn in the digital marketplace to sell any kind of e-commerce. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide, just like me and Yee Apparel. So whether you're just a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every single sales channel. So whether you're selling satin sheets from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering organic olive oil on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered. And once you reach your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. And that's why I'm building a new Grangersmith.com on top of Shopify's platform. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the entire United States. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across the globe, over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign in for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Granger, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Granger to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.com/Granger. We had our Yee Apparel fall launch, and this is my favorite launch we've ever done. I love the new concealed jacket that we have. It looks really nice. And there's like a zip-up soft shell jacket that's a desert camo that I love, and then a couple of the hats that are just crushing it for me. Anyway, I'm really excited about that. You could find out if we have anything left at that fall launch at yee.com and go check it out for yourself. And then finally, if you need a message from me personally, custom made for you on my cell phone, you could do that through cameo.com/Grangersmith. A lot of people will email and say, hey man, how can I get a personalized message for my girlfriend that Granger says happy birthday or happy anniversary to my wife, or how could I get a message to my son to tell him congratulations on finishing school or starting school? And I always say, well, it's super easy. Cameo.com/Granger Smith, or download the Cameo app and search for me, Granger Smith. It's super easy. You fill out the little form. It shoots a message to me and it says, this person wants you to wish their son a happy birthday. Here's his name. Here's what he's into. Here's why he likes you. I could read that easily, pull out my phone, put on the selfie cam, and then make some kind of message, however you want me to do it, and send straight to you. So that's an easy thing to do, especially if you have someone you want to buy a gift for that you don't really know. They kind of have everything and you don't really know what to get them, or it's last minute. Maybe you missed their birthday or getting ready for the holidays coming up. Cameo is a great thing. I've done it for probably 5 years now. And it seems to be just a great tool for someone to get a quick message from me. Okay, back to the podcast. Back to the podcast here. And this is an interesting subject line here. It says, how do I know if I'm still in love with my wife? Hey, Granger, my name is Daniel. I'm 27. I've been with my wife since high school, 2011. We got married 5 years ago. We had our son 3 years ago. And since the birth of my son, something within her changed. It started slowly, but she would go out with her girlfriends once a month and then every other week. And then that progressed into a weekly thing. I've had multiple talks with her about spending more time with me and her son. But there is weekends when she leaves town and seems to be living a happy life without us. At first, I kept thinking, I get it. She needs some time to get away from home. But now, it really seems like that's all she wants to do. Our date nights are usually filled with silence because I try to avoid arguments right now. My son loves mommy and loves to see her, but I don't allow her to take him along with her friends whenever they leave town, because let's just say her girlfriends are not people I'd want him to be around. I feel trapped. I feel like I'm still living there just to see my son while his mommy is around, but I don't know if I'm still in love with her. I read this quote, "You can't fall in love twice, because the second time you're falling in love with the memories." If there is time, a little more background about her. She lost her mom when she was 5, and her dad lives in Mexico and was not ever around until she was 18. He passed away 6 years ago. Her sister-in-law basically raised her. Unfortunately, her sister-in-law passed away as well to cancer 5 years ago. She also lost her brother to suicide 6 years ago. I've been there for as much as I can, and I've supported her as much as I can. She and I were really close and happy until just recent times. I do not know what changed. All right, Daniel. Thanks for emailing, brother. And I'm sorry for the really serious situation that you're in. And thank you for trusting Parker and I in this podcast with such a sensitive question, especially so young at 27. You're 27, married 5 years ago, had a son 2 years into the marriage, 3 years ago. So that's the only child. Okay. I have to try to fill my brain with what you got going on here. And let me start with this. I'll start with, without knowing a lot of details, let me start with what I know about the subject line that you wrote. How do I know if I'm still in love with my wife? Okay, that's interesting. Love, in its different kinds of definitions and categories, love can be seen in two ways. One, emotionally. Love happens as a reaction to your emotions. But more importantly, and more properly defined for marriage, is love is a covenant. And a covenant is an agreement. It is a decision that you have made, and you might not have even made it consciously, but you certainly did when you stood in front of the congregation or the whoever married you, and even if it was just a courthouse, you made a covenant, you made a contractual agreement. And that is such an unromantic thing to say, but it's reliable and it's true in terms of when you make a covenant with someone to marry them, that means essentially that you will choose to love them even when it stops benefiting you, when it stops, you stop gaining stuff for yourself from it. Man, that is an idea that's completely lost, but that's what a covenant is. When you make a covenant with another person or a group of people, or when God makes a covenant with his people, it is not contingent upon that person and becoming a rebel, right? When God chooses his people to make a covenant with, they constantly rebel in the Bible, and he constantly brings them back in. You have made a covenant with your wife. Emotionally, you're out. I understand that part of your love is out. Emotionally, you're out. But you're not receiving anything from her. And so you immediately think, maybe I'm completely out of this marriage. And thousands of people agree with you because you're not getting anything out of it. Instead of saying, babe, I want to have this talk with you. Can I take you to dinner? Find her favorite restaurant, her favorite food. And you take her out and you just go, I want to tell you that I know things have been different lately. And I know that you've been, and I've been a little harsh with you, because I know you probably have, Daniel. And I just want to say I'm sorry. And I know that you've had trouble trusting. And you're thinking, dad, Mexico, brother, suicide, gained trust with sister-in-law, she's gone to cancer. But you say, but I'm not leaving you. I'm here for you to serve you in whatever way you need from me. If that means you need some time with your friends on the weekends, I'll watch our son. But I just want you to know that whatever you got going on, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here for you. I made a covenant promise on our wedding day that I'm standing by. I wonder what that would do to this relationship, because I don't think you've done that. And I think it's probably been more like, I don't like your friends. I don't like them hanging around my son. I don't like you leaving all the time. I'm don't know what you're doing. I'm a little jealous of what's going on. In fact, is there another guy? Hey, I don't even know if I should stay here anymore. That's probably what happens when you say, we go on a date and I try to keep quiet so we don't argue. I got a feeling that's what the argument sounds like, something like that. Parker, what do you have to this?
Yeah, I'd say because you are married, this is going to be different advice than someone if they were dating. But I would say that your feelings are real, but they're not always reliable. And like you said, you can acknowledge that you don't have that emotional feeling anymore. But so many marriages end because people say that they're just not in love with them anymore. They just fell out of love. They lost the spark. And it's just like, man, that's not what the relationship is built on. Like you said, that love, you know, how many marriages, how many weddings do we see where they quote 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, kind, love does not envy or boast, it's not arrogant or rude. It bears all things. It endures all things. And it's like, man, this is why you stood up in front of friends and family and vowed before God to enter a covenant that till death do us part, I'm in this with you. You know, that's, you gave her your word. And so I empathize with you, man. I'm so sorry that it's tough. It's obviously hard to do it when it's not reciprocating, but man, your responsibility as the man is to lay down your life for her, to find ways to love her, to choose to love her, and to not just say, to not bail out just because you're not feeling like it. A practical resource that I found super helpful was the book Love and Respect. And I would encourage you to go to the, it's short answer is men primarily need respect, and then women primarily need to feel loved and cherished. And so you could go to that. I'm not telling you to go to her and tell her that she's supposed to respect you. I'm saying you go to that woman's section, and you look for different ways to love her and cherish her, regardless of if she reciprocates it or not, because that's going to help improve things.
It's great. Next question, subject line says, gift of God, ? Good morning. I wanted to ask something that I've been hesitant to ask. I truly struggle to understand. My husband cheated and has a new baby with another woman. Our youngest is 18. He tells me and everyone that the baby is a gift from God. Is it really a gift from God when he is breaking God's rules by cheating on me? He told me that God gave him the gift, but it might be my punishment for the wrong I have done in my life over the years. (Parentheses) I have never cheated in all of our marriage. (Close parentheses) I have suffered with cancer and I'm sick again with the same symptoms. I can't seem to forgive him. And as soon as I am able, I am leaving our home since he will not. Thanks for your advice, JP. All right, JP, thanks so much for the email. And I'm so sorry you're in the situation. I'm going to kind of recap from my own mind here. Your husband, there's no divorce in here, so I'm assuming still your current husband, who is currently living with you in your current home, has cheated on you with another woman that is now having a baby with her, but he's still in your house and still married to you. Parker, I'm going to let you lead this one.
I'm not sure what the question, what was the question?
I don't know what the question is either.
Is the baby a gift from
God? Oh yeah, that's the question. Is the baby a gift from God? Well, first of all, before Parker answers, we'll both say a resounding yes. All babies, regardless of the circumstance of how they were conceived, are a gift from God. Like that's unquestionably true in all circumstances, all around the world, of all different people and all different ethnicities and religion and tribe and all babies are a gift from God, regardless of how they were procreated. Go ahead, Bart.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're in this situation. From my limited knowledge, it sounds like he's manipulative and he's using this to rub it in your face. And so are children a gift from God? Absolutely. Does that justify his cheating on you like it was God's will for him to have this baby with another woman? Of course not. Of course not. And yeah, don't believe that. And don't believe that it's punishment on you for something that you did. Yeah.
I don't know, JP, I don't know if there's anything else. Yeah. It's so wrong that it's so wrong that it makes my answer even shorter. There's nothing to elaborate on. It's ridiculous. God's not punishing you with a new baby from your husband who cheated on you. And this new baby deserves love and respect, but your husband doesn't. Your husband deserves love, but he doesn't deserve your trust or your respect.
Nothing to add.
Okay. Speaking of trust, the next one, subject line says, how do you trust God after losing a loved one? Hey, Granger, my name is Brian. I'm struggling with keeping my faith in God. Over the last 2 years, I've lost 8 of my closest family members. How do I keep trusting God when he keeps taking my family away from me? I love your music and your podcast. God bless and have a great day. Classic question, Brian. And man, 8 is a lot. I'm so sorry. But what you're asking isn't totally normal and understandable from someone who is struggling to know God. That's what this boils down to. Most questions I get on the podcast that have to do with faith or spirituality or God, most of them could be answered by saying, you don't know God well enough. And Parker, how do you learn who God is?
Through reading his word, aka the Bible.
Yeah. Brian, you read the Bible and you learn who God is. And what you see really is a people throughout the 1500 years of history within the Bible canon. You see a history of a people that endured suffering, that endured the loss of loved ones. One thing I could slightly correct you on is that it's not necessarily God taking your family away from you. They were never yours. You know, people are gifts. Everything is a gift. Every good thing is a gift. And even things that we struggle with are gifts. And it was never really yours to be taken from you. And so I think instead of diving in deeper to how do you trust God in this situation, I would encourage you to develop some kind of routine of reading your Bible. And Tyler and I talked last week on the last podcast, reading a study Bible. If you've never read the Bible before, reading with a study Bible so that you could kind of get this commentary while you're reading of who are we talking about here? Who's writing? Why are they writing? When are they writing? And that's constantly going, just kind of supplementing your reading. Second thing I would say is to join a local church, to be able to walk with God's people and learn with them and empathize with them and be poured into by them when you're going through a loss. So you're not ever alone. Walking through this alone is impossible. So I think there's deeper issues here, and I hope that this could be an encouragement for you to learn who God is.
Yeah, if his question is, how can I learn to trust someone? Then the answer is, you got to figure out who that someone is.
Right.
And you just laid out the practical next steps of that.
Yep. It's not just God. It seems like I kind of go down this rabbit hole in this podcast, but there's so many times we're not just talking about God in this situation. If you said, Granger, I've got a, there's a new guy at work. He just started working for us and we're on this factory assembly line and he's the next guy over. And so everything I do, it's determined by what he does. And I want to learn to trust him. Granger, tell me, how do I trust this guy? I'm like, spend time with him. Talk to him. Listen to him. Go to lunch with him. Have coffee with him.
Look at his track record.
Yeah. Talk to other people that have talked to him. Talk to his family that knows him. So you're asking the same question, how do I learn to trust God? Talk to him.
That's great.
Listen to him. Okay.
That's helpful.
Let's hit one more here. I'm literally trying to find one that's not a God question because I don't want just to talk about who God is in every single question, which I really could. Okay, how about, that's a really long one.
Is it safe to say that if people keep their questions concise, they have a better chance of getting them read?
That's totally right. If you keep it about the length of a phone, it helps me. Because if I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, we got time for another question, and you kind of wrote a novel to me, it's harder. This one just says life question. Hey, Granger, I'd like to stay anonymous, but I have a question for you. I am 21M active duty in Florida. I'm not sure what that means. I am 21 active duty AD in Florida. I've been a huge fan since I was 14. I love your music and your podcast. I've been working nights recently and also listening to your After Midnight radio. Backstory is my girlfriend and I have been together for 3 years in October of 2023. We were high school sweethearts. She's currently working on her bachelor's and master's in 2 years, will be another 4 years of school total. I have 4 years left of my AD contract here. She transferred to a school down here to move in with me. We're both from Michigan. Herself and her family have been pressuring me about when I'm going to propose to her. Honestly, I'm just not ready yet myself. And I don't think she's ready yet either. I have so many toys I want to buy before a ring. I'm nervous about marriage because of the risk that I'd lose it if it didn't work out 5 years down the road. I apologize for the book I just wrote. What are your thoughts? Well, actually, this comes from Anonymous. Anonymous, actually, you wrote a perfect length. So thanks. Thanks for the perfect length email here. And man, you got a great guest with Parker sitting here on the microphone for this particular question. And I think there's been several instances on this exact episode that we've kind of touched on your situation. One, I'll start with this. I'm nervous about marriage because of the risk I'll lose it if it didn't work out 5 years down the road. Well, throw that idea out, because if you get married, you're expected to make a covenant, like I said a couple questions ago. You're expected to be anonymous, a man of your word. You're going to make a contract, a social contract. You are going to agree that you will love her till death do you part. And I think we have completely lost that concept, partly because of movies, social media, all the choices we have. There's so many girls out there, so many fishes in the sea. If this one doesn't work out, there's another one that'll probably work out. That's the statistic, right? So we have completely lost this idea that when I get married, I'm going to make an agreement, even if it doesn't work out the way I think, I'm not getting what I thought from it, I'm going to make an agreement. So just throw out the idea that if it doesn't work out 5 years, instead trade that thought with, I'm a man of my word. I'm a man of integrity. I'm in the active duty, and I will make an agreement that I will not back out of, right? Parker, I'll let you dive into where else you want to jump in here. Family's pressuring him to get married. He has too many toys he wants to buy before a ring. He's nervous. They're going through school. He doesn't know if he's ready.
Yeah, I would say that that's so common today. And the world tells you that marriage is a burden, that children are a burden, that you should accumulate as much wealth, that you should get all of the toys, and social media and media in general has fed us this addiction to variety, like you said, of the grass is always greener. The grass is always greener. We live in a TikTok world of just something new, something new. I got to get this toy. Maybe there's a better girl. Maybe there's something better out there. And it's scary, man. It's ruining us. And like I said earlier as well, with why would he get married? I don't know if he's a Christian. I know that we're not trying to make every single question about who God is, but it's hard to answer that question without asking yourself, man, if you're not a Christian, then why would you get married, dude?
True.
Make as much money as possible, buy all of the toys,
yeah.
Live with your girlfriend as long as you can until she forces children on you. But it just makes me sick. It's just a recipe for disaster. How many relationships out there are people dating for 6, 7, 8 years? And you just have the resentment of the girlfriend because he still hasn't proposed. You have the in-laws cornering him on holidays to ask him why he still hasn't done it. And the guy's just like, why would I want to obligate myself to that kind of commitment with all the variety that's out here? So I don't know if that really helps, but it's just like, in a certain sense, it's just like, I don't blame you, man. It's hard when the world is telling you that marriage and children are a burden, and to just get all, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, you know? And so, I mean, I would just say, man, I can't answer it without saying that, man, I don't know if you're a believer in Jesus Christ or not, but to find a local church, to read your Bible, it's going to explain marriage and the purpose of it and teach you how to have commitment to one person, and I would say to start there. Otherwise, you're just going to be in a terrible cycle of living with a girlfriend who resents you, and you're going to resent her when you get married because you didn't get to buy all the stuff you wanted.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, and I think maybe the final cap I'll put on this is that I want to just dispel the myth that you're not ready. You said, I'm just not ready yet, and I don't think she is either. Bro, you're definitely ready. You're got a lot going on with school, and you're an adult. You have moved from Michigan to Florida. You've got a career plan and a path. The only reason I would say you're not ready is if you were 16 years old, living with mommy and daddy, and your brain was still developing. But you, just like many men before you, are. Actually, I think that's what I'm 21M means. I think that means he's 21 male. I think that's what he means. Active duty. That's what AD means. Okay, so this is all coming together. You're 21. You're a dude that's 21 active duty in Florida. And if you're ready for the military, if the government thinks you're ready to drink alcohol and drive a car and serve our country in war, but you're saying, I don't think I'm ready to promise a girl that I'll stay with her and serve her and, Lord willing, have children with her. I'm here to tell you that's a myth that you've heard somewhere, and it's wrong, because for thousands of years before you, men have been ready at 21 years old to marry the girl they're with.
And just to add on to that, at the very end, I would also say that is not saying that you should definitely marry this girl.
True.
Because we just answered two questions of guys who are married, and you know they're not getting out of it, dude. If you're doing this, you're doing it till death, and you're gonna end up the dude saying, "I think she's cheating on me. There's another kid that she had." So that's not to say that you shouldn't be extremely picky and be like, "Is this the girl that is going to be the mother of my children? That is going to be selfless?" And that is going to endure hard times.
Yeah. This question almost should have started the podcast, and then we could have the other ones, that the bad stories that happen after. But I will say this, Anonymous. You said, together for 3 years, she's your girlfriend, and you're high school sweethearts. I don't see anything wrong with her. And I think you have a lot of decisions to make, and I think we've made a pretty good case of just kind of dispelling the myths of the world and then putting it back in your court. That's all the time we got. Love you guys. See you next Monday. Thanks for joining me on the Granger Smith podcast. I appreciate all of you guys. You could help me out by rating this podcast on iTunes. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to this channel, hit that little like button and notifications bell so that you never miss any time I upload a video. If you have a question for me that you would like me to answer, email grangersmithpodcast@gmail.com.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.